following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
Episode 51 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. This program brought to you by Defense Soap as Defense Soap revolutionized athletic hygiene in 2005. With the introduction of a bar soap containing natural ingredients proven to be effective against skin infections common to wrestlers. Today, Defense Soap leads the world in sports hygiene innovation with a complete line of bar soap, shower gels, and body wipes that contain high-grade tea-free eucalyptus and peppermint oils. Defense Soap, defend what you have built, and check them out at defensesoap.com. Here on episode 51, talking again with Coach Dan Gable. Today, our topic with Coach Gable here on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast is going to be the late Dave Schultz. And Coach Gable, I just want to get right into it in regards to the first time. I want to go chronological here. When was the first time you remember hearing about some kid from California named Dave Schultz?
Well, you know, it's not going to be exact. It's a few years back. And, you know, I do remember most everything in wrestling, which is probably the only thing that I remember well. I think it was the first impact. I'm going to say the first impact was there was this kid that was in high school that was making a trip to the toughest, one of the toughest tournaments in the world for senior athletes. And that was probably the Tbilisi trip in Tbilisi, Georgia. And, you know, being a four-time person that went there, two times as an athlete, a couple times as a coach. You know, at that time, it was just a weight class of 34 and probably 26 Russians. And there was this high school kid named Dave Schultz that was going to go to this tournament. And I'm thinking, I've been there, done that. What's he doing? What's he doing? You know, so it was very inquisitive to me. And so I followed it really close.
So when you're following his performance and you see how he does a light bulb go off in your head and be like, I got to find a way to get this guy to Iowa?
Well, you know, obviously that's always concern of a wrestling coach, just always getting some, you know, good quality kids, good wrestlers, great wrestlers, and the more the better if you can. But for me, it was like, you know, I think I was a little too confident as a coach. We were, you know, probably winning quite a bit, or actually maybe I wasn't so confident yet. Maybe it was more like I was just really into the building mode when he was that young. And yeah, you know, that's who you want to get. But, you know, I think I was focusing on my athletes more than really what was out there. And I just was so confident in the system because it seemed to work. And the system was actually what was going on inside that wrestling room that, you know, has padded walls. But you know, so I probably didn't pay as much attention to actually maybe going out and working as hard on recruiting to Dave Schultz. And that's probably why, one of the reasons why we didn't get him, is because, you know, there's other people out there working a little harder at that aspect. There's other people out there maybe talking more to him. And, you know, but you know, a thing that makes me interested, you know, I look at Dave when he went that young to such a tough tournament. And, you know, most people, I don't think it would have done them really a lot of good, you know, but I analyzed Dave over the years, and I think it was okay for him to go there, even though I think he had to go for maybe two or three times or more on that trip when he was younger before he actually maybe placed or won it. But it, most people, it might have dejected him, it might have knocked him down a level, it might have put him on a path for not being as successful when you don't win. But he became more determined and just kept getting a little bit better. And, you know, I'm not so sure that it was the right thing for him to do totally at that age, but it seemed to work because he was in the sport for a long time. And I mean, he just eventually worked his way up to the first place medal over there, I'm sure. And he won the hearts of the Russians. And I think it had a lot to do with him going over there when he was a kid. Because what kid would go in their right mind to that tournament when you're in high school, when people usually have to graduate for 3 or 4 years and very few people win it from America? And and that's a good point, what I just said. What person in their right mind? Well, people look at David. People look at David. And I don't think too many people had the mind of David Schultz. The mind, by that I mean, what was going on in that mind? And more than that, just how high of a level did he want to attain? You know, it's just, he was a little bit of a mystery to me. And so I got a lot to say about him. So go ahead.
So when, you know, early on in your coaching career, Schultz ends up going to Oklahoma State first before going to UCLA to join his brother Mark. They drop the program. Then he ends up with your good buddy Stan Abel in Oklahoma. And talk about the college coaching battles that Oklahoma and Iowa had in that era, and how Dave Schultz was on the other side of the mat from you, and how you had to coach against a guy like that.
Well, first of all, it's interesting, again, that, you know, he's a California kid. I'm not even sure what you just said. I wasn't even sure that was the path. But, you know, you probably know because you probably looked it up, but more than me. But, you know, Oklahoma State, UCLA, Oklahoma. You know, if I think about Dave Schultz, that third stop at the University of Oklahoma with Stan Abel, who actually helped me quite a bit in the off season, in summer camps and different places where I'd run into him, mostly summer camps, where he actually helped me by what his lingo was, what he told me, what he did for me verbally, and you know, then just having a good time with him, kind of in a relaxation mode, you know, after the camp that night and stuff like that. So, you know, it was probably the best place for Dave Schultz to go to University of Oklahoma with a guy like Stan Abel, because David was strong, and his brother would kind of seem to, you know, follow a little bit in David's line there. And so, you know, whatever David would, you know, kind of do, I think Mark was, you know, very much looked up to him and really would probably want to go along that same path. So, you know, I do think that Stan Abel was one of the best places for him to go, because if he would have came to Iowa and to wrestle for me, he might have had to conform a little bit. And, you know, I don't know if Dave Schultz needed to conform. You know, if I'd really think about it, yeah, maybe a little more in a few technical and tactical situations. You know, because, you know, he's the kind of guy that he didn't care if he won by how he won. It was like, I think David actually, when he went out there, if he could win by, you know, like say for an example, the athlete got hurt, or if he hurt the athlete, or if he just choked him out, or if he was just able to control the match, you know, but he loved every match, but Stan Abel would would have given and did give Dave Schultz a little more freedom and a little more of what Dave Schultz probably needed along the lines of what he wanted himself to do. Wrestle outside of the room, go to the training center, go on trips internationally, wrestle freestyle, and then I don't know if I would have been, I would have been maybe for too much the local team, the Iowa team, and Abel was good at that, I love Stan Abel, but sometimes I found out later that he was kind of just, he was just kind of chiding me a little bit. And, sometimes you have to do that. But I will probably, I don't know. I think he could have wrestled for me, but I have a question mark, and I don't like question marks. So that's kind of where I'm at with David.
But and the differences between Dave and Mark, they're immense. And, I think people look at Mark Schultz as the bruiser. Do you think Mark would have probably been a better fit for the Iowa style than Dave, who was more, free-spirited?
I don't think so, because I think Mark needed a little bit of what Dave had to offer. And that's what Dave had to offer was probably more like what Stan Abel had instead of Dan Gable. I mean, they wrestled for me. I mean, they wrestled for me in the 83 World Championships. Dave won his gold medal there in the first World Championships. 84, both of them wrestled for me in the Olympic Games. The thing is, we got along, and they really conformed to me. But it was only for that. They didn't have to stick with me year round. They got to leave and go back to where their home was. So it worked out pretty good. And I think they both respected me and I respected them, but they weren't the typical at that time, University of Iowa wrestler. Of course, then when I say that, all of a sudden I look and I have a guy like Ray Frenzer on my team. I'm saying I can conform to most people, but you know what? Maybe the Schultzes helped me in my coaching, and I know they did. Just early on, I hadn't been a head coach that long, started in 77. So I dealt with them in 83 and 84, and they kept going. But I'm sure that they gave me the opportunity to coach some people like a Ray Brenzer later on, which I have to give them credit for.
Now, one more thing on Mark I want to talk to, because, again, we're talking a lot about Dave here on this episode, is that match with Ed Bannick in one of the greatest NCAA finals, not the cleanest wrestled match. Matter of fact, there were some real sloppy moments in the match, but when you have two guys that high caliber and what Ed was going for and what happened there, what do you remember most about that match?
I remember most that Eddie Bannick, who had a lot of confidence in himself, especially as something happened to him, where all of a sudden something triggered something else that he would, go into that mode that he loved the most. And that was aggressiveness. And that was a little bit of high risk, throws instead of maybe leg tackles, those types of things. And it was a historic moment, actually, for Ed, because, I don't even mean it in a bad way, because he lost the match. But he really gained some insight into what coaching's all about and what a coach can do for you. And if you come out of that game plan, then, you better make sure that you have 100% the ability to come out of that. Otherwise, you stick with that coaching ability because that's what a coach is for. And so right away in the match, Eddie got a little confident and he got a 4-point move. And I don't think he realized what took place. Mark Schultz actually did a quick forcing throw that threw himself to his back, and Eddie didn't really throw Mark. It was more like he stopped his move, but it was not a very good executed move. It was a forced move. And so all of a sudden there's 4 points on the scoreboard for Eddie. And then Eddie's mind snapped and it went right into that aggressive mode. And so he, you know, and that's the way he liked to wrestle. So all of a sudden, you know, the match was going to change because he was going to come out of his game plan. Dave Schultz, I mean, Mark Schultz was good enough that you had to have a game plan and you had to stay with that game plan. And Eddie Bannick came out of that game plan because he went right in and went upper body right away again. At this time, Mark actually threw Ed to his back, which and held him there for a little bit of time, which, you know, probably took a little energy out of Eddie, and Eddie wasn't the same the rest of the match. But the game plan going into it was you're not going upper body with Mark Schultz, even though, yeah, you may be able to beat him, but you can beat him somewhere else and without the risk. And he came out of that. But what really helped Eddie is because Eddie realized for the future that there was things that he had to follow from a coaching point of view that made him a better wrestler, to have him come back and win another national title, have him go on to win, you know, the Olympic Games. And then he had his profession for a while in the coaching, so he really kind of understood that profession a little bit better. So it was a good learning experience. But Mark Schultz, you know, was a guy that he had a lot of balance and just had a lot of good things going for him. And you can look and see what happened, you know, his credentials. And because of that, that was somebody you just don't come out of your game plan.
Circling back to Dave, as you alluded to coaching him on the 83 and 84 teams, 82, right after he wins an NCAA title at Oklahoma, he wrestles and wins a bronze medal at the World Championships at 82 kilos. Next year, he's on the squad down at 74 kilos, wins his first world title, and then into the Olympic year. And we're coming off an Olympic cycle where Jimmy Carter and the Carter administration had boycotted the 80 games. The Eastern Bloc was basically, I'm not sure if they'd announced that they were going to boycott 84 or not, but it was definitely looming. When you get Dave Schultz out there and you still got him wrestling against the best guys in the world, 1983, what do you recall about his world championship performance?
Well, first of all, we were dominating that weight class for quite a while, most of the time anyway, between you know, Desik and then Kemp. And, you know, so just to be able to go in there and you know, represent that weight class and actually, I don't remember exactly, you know, if Kemp tried out or not and who won. I mean, obviously he tried out. Dave Schultz, you know, won those matches, but I do remember that David actually, well, first of all, going into that tournament, we didn't have the information needed to realize that they had changed some rules. The rules they had changed was you could mat wrestle a lot longer right now in 83. And it was in Kiev, and all the Russians, they were all ready for that mat wrestling. And it kind of hit us hard because we were used to maybe 12, 15 seconds being in the down position, then blowing the whistle, but they jumped and they went extraordinarily long. You know, they were giving you 30, 45 seconds, 50, a minute, and they were hitting some really good mat moves. But we still did well. We still did well. And we had a rush, you know, we had a Barayev in the finals. And I'll tell you, we wore him out. We wore Barayev out. And Schultz, you know, won his first world title there. But we also had some good performances. Leroy Smith, I think Bruce Baumgartner, but we did. We were kind of caught with nobody giving us information about the new rules, and so that hurt us a little bit. But it was a good event, and Dave Schultz again, right in the heart of the communist countries, showed that he was for real, and so, you know, I was pretty cool.
Yeah, Kiev at that point, of course, now is Ukraine, but part of the USSR. And that year, seven Soviets won world championships. When you're an American going into the Soviet Union in the heart of the Cold War, and then what's it take beyond talent to win those type of things? We've heard about the alleged corruption with the communist states were together. If there were two out of three officials there, you knew that where that was going to go. How much more did Americans have to beat Soviets on Soviet soil from them to actually get your hand raised?
You pretty much had to have a reputation that that you were pretty unique. And I think the more unique you were, the more they were going to give you somewhat of a fair match. Somewhat. They really didn't like you well enough to say, okay, we're going to give you a fair match. We still want our guy to win, our Soviet to win, but we appreciate wrestling to the point that, you're going to get somewhat of a fair shake, but not against our guy, but maybe more of a fair shake than it would be if they didn't really appreciate you. And so that appreciation, that was kind of given to me, actually. But you know what? Dave Schultz had it by the Soviets, by the communist regime. And, I'm sure he had several standing ovations in front of thousands of people that appreciate the sport. And so, that's what's kind of interesting and kind of neat, where a guy wins over the opponents, and not the opponents on the mat, but the opponents in the stands. And definitely Dave was one of those guys. And again, not to the point where they want him to beat their guy, but if anybody's going to beat their guy, then they can look and see, well, that guy is the one, because he entertains us. He loves the sport like we do. And so, he'd be one of those guys, but he also got to the point where there was something that was even more unique. And that means, all of a sudden, when you get out of that appreciation mode and all of a sudden I go back to what I talked about earlier, how's he going to win? If he's going to win by injury, he's going to win by decision, he's going to win by pinning the guy, or if he's going to win by some technicality or whatever. And I believe Dave Schultz, in the country of, I should say, maybe Russia, all those foreign countries over there, all the communist countries, but he had such a reputation at one time, and it was not as the kind that you wanted at the time, because when he stepped on the mat, there was a time where they wouldn't let him wrestle. By that, I mean they would let him wrestle, but they would stop his holds. So they would stop his front headlock. I mean, if you stop, Dave Schultz, that was a big move for Dave Schultz. And so if Dave Schultz, guy shot on him, the guy threw the front headlock, and right when he threw the front headlock, they blow the whistle because they said, you're going to choke him out. Because he actually did choke out a couple guys over, I believe, in Georgia and in Tbilisi tournament one year. And so, enough's enough. Wrestling's great, but if you're going to not be fair, which, of course, they're not fair, so it's it was kind of interesting. And so he had to work his way back into the judges overseas, because I'm not talking about, there was a lot of European judges that really, if they took the mat with Dave Schultz, they stopped him a lot from his executing his holds. Well, just because he, had some of this reputation for actually maybe throwing a choke from a front headlock or being on top. So that's another position where you would reach back, get an ankle, crank a leg, and you'd crank the leg to the point where you would actually, you could injure the knee somewhat. Dave knew positioning really well to the point where he could actually do locks on his opponents, defensively, on top. And, sometimes when he got it, the referees would, they would know from the past, and they wouldn't give him a chance to execute the hold that he was trying to perform. Now, right or wrong, some of them were perfectly good And just because he had that reputation, he wouldn't even allow him to do the other ones. Or there you go again, where they kind of trying to cheat a little bit. And yes, they had that opportunity to do that. So sometimes David was his own worst enemy just because he was so feared in certain situations. But overall, he would actually kind of work his way back in. I remember a few times when he was wrestling where all of a sudden the referee come in and stop, and they would just raise both hands and just kind of like, you know, like, I'm okay. No, I won't do nothing. I won't hurt you. I won't surrender. You know, I'm surrendering, you know, from that position. And so, you know, he knew how to play the games with him. But, you know, it's amazing that that a guy like Dave Schultz, you know, I'm trying to think. It's quite a few years now, but you know, he might have went back to a major tournament just to try it out. You know, that's one of these things. Andre Metzger does that a little bit, and you know, and they both were teammates, so there was something there that kept these guys in the sport for a long time, and they must have loved it. That's all I can tell you.
So in '84, you come through. There's the Eastern Bloc for the most part, boycotts. You got the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 gold medals, 2 silvers to go with it in Los Angeles. You're the coach, and you've got a dynamic crew. You talked about how Dave and Mark were different, how they each needed, and how you helped you coach guys like Ray Brenger. Well, you've got a Randy Lewis who you coached, who was definitely a march to the beat of a different drum. And you got the Bannock twins who you also coached. Then you got Big Bruce, who was basically the anchor for a decade and a half, who was more of a stoic individual. And then you got little Bobby Weaver. I mean, how did the personalities of this team really just mesh with the coaching staffs? And I guess then how did Dave respond to everybody around him?
Well, it wasn't going to be easy. So, especially when we had, you know, a little bit of turmoil going on within the politics of the sport again, between, you know, Oklahoma and Iowa, and me being the coach, and Leroy, you know, being not in the position on the team because of had to go through the court systems and all that kind of stuff. So you got a little bit of backlash there you have to work through. So that's another one of these things that probably most coaches don't have to go through, and most athletes and teams. So, you know, we really did actually over time fit together really well. And I think that's one of the reasons. I think the whole philosophy for this 84 team was we were going to win in Moscow, you know, and in 80, you know, a lot of that same philosophy kind of pushed forward for 4 years. And so we weren't going to let when the other countries didn't participate, that couldn't affect it, our mind, even though it may have, but I didn't see it in performance. I really didn't. And I think that's why this team, you know, was picked the top sporting team of the 84 Olympic Games for America. But you know, and Joe Gonzalez was the only guy that didn't place, and it was only because he had to pull out because of injury. Otherwise, you know, he would definitely medal. But and again, we had a little turmoil because Mark Schultz, you know, Dave's brother, actually, I think got disqualified and was going to be out of the tournament. But they met again and they came out of it and they let him back in. And another one of these holds that are they legal or illegal? And I think they called an illegal hold on him, and the guy couldn't continue to wrestle at 180. And so, but it was one of these things that it looked like he really wasn't trying to do an illegal hold. It's just we were in a position where the thing moved from legal to illegal, and it was just part of the pressure. And so, you know, they made the right call. But you know, he could have easily in another place that would have been in Moscow or something. You know, he could have easily been disqualified, Mark. But you know, it was one of those things that it worked for us again and helped us win that team championship. But I think the mindset of even the Schultz boys, the Bannock boys, you know, Lewis, Davis, you know, the Weaver, you know, it was mostly, you know, we're we're at the Olympic Games. Whether the Olympic Games is a full Olympic Games or not a full Olympic Games, you know, we're going about it in the same manner. And that's what you have to do. You can't look at all the things that's going on around you and say, oh, we can go in there and win easy. Because if you go in there and say you can win easy, you're not going to win. That's just the way it is. Somebody's going to upset you. It was a great job. But no, it was right through the event that the Schultzes actually did things I never thought they could do before or never would do. And I'll tell you what, because I'm a little goofy as a coach and, had some goofy ways of training. It's not really goofy. It's great ways to build your mind. And they did them. And I was really proud of those boys for actually doing some of the things that they normally weren't going to do. Not to excess, but just to the point where that made them better.
Moving through the next quad, Dave goes silver in 85, bronze in 86, 87 another silver. So he's setting himself up a real good run in 88, then doesn't make the team. When you look at athletes like that have such a good quad, even that we're seeing nowadays, I mean, that Olympic trials is one of those disheartening events where you lose. That is something that's all life-changing and life-altering. Dave at least had the medal from 84. What do you remember about the 88 trials and Dave not making the team?
Well, I remember that we had a great guy at the weight class. Here's the thing. And let's go back to originally what I talked about with Dave. Maybe Stan Abel was the best place for him just because he wanted more control of his own life. And I give kids control, but sometimes when I see something that's really needed from my point of view, I try to step in and I'm kind of a hardliner on that from that point of view. So, I think what Dave, you talked about the silver medals. And there was quite a few there. I really think that what Dave lacked a little bit was scoring ability from the standing position from an aggressive offensive point of view. He was good. He was great there. But I think he could have actually developed a little bit more and just through maybe the mentality of aggressiveness or just actually being in a little better shape or, something like that, which I think I could have gave him. And I think a lot of those medals that were silver would have maybe been gold. But, he got enough. He had a lot of gold medals. But the guy wrestled forever. But I'm just saying it's kind of like the bliss that you go back when you look at it in high school. He went to it, then he went to it again, then he went to it again. I kind of look at it like, he got used to going over there and doing well, but not quite winning it. Maybe it wasn't really his time to go there until he was a little more developed. So I don't know what was going on in his head. In fact, I don't know if anybody knew. Maybe Nancy knew, but I doubt if his brother knew. But, totally, it's just, it's one of these things that, you got to kind of be able to communicate and understand to really give a guy the chance. So what I'm saying is some of those, he got beat off the team, and then we went to gold anyway with Kenny Mundy. I think that's what you're talking about. And Kenny Mundy's a tremendous explosive wrestler, and, he did a lot. So it wasn't like he was getting beat off by anybody. But for David to be able to continue to be on those teams, to be able to win those different color medals, I just think that there was still probably another level that, maybe he never got to. That could have made him a little bit better. He had a magnificent career, So what do you say?
Well, even if his career ends in 87 and 88 not making the team, he comes back 6 years later. He's now, a 33, approaching 34. When he comes back, makes a U.S. team in 93, wins another silver medal, and he's pumping right to the next quad. Of course, we know how that tragic story ends. But he made world teams in 93, 94, 95 going in to 1996. Oh, and a guy at that age, we don't see that very often. Him and Bruce were pretty much doing that into their career. Yep. But what made Dave just so tough to beat even into his 30s?
Well, here we go again. Are we going to go back into the coaching aspect? So, you know, maybe some of those gold medals or silver medals would have been gold, you know, had I, you know, he could have had a little more aggressiveness stuff. But you know what? He was in it for the long run. And because he's in it for the long run, you know, there's only so many years that your body and mind can hold up to being an athlete, especially in a sport like wrestling. You know, I don't think you can play, you know, we don't play wrestle anyway. So, you know, when you play basketball or play football or you, well, football is not usually that. Well, then again, depends on what position it is. But David was probably a little bit like a quarterback. They're protecting him. He was protecting himself a lot when he was wrestling. And so I really think that he was in control a lot. And because he wasn't so aggressive shooting, getting out of position, not really out of position, but getting in more scrambles, that type of stuff. And he usually scrambled from a defensive position instead of from an offensive position better. And so I think it took a little bit less wear and tear on his body. So that's why he could probably go up until the ages that he had. You know, it's just, it is pretty amazing that he's still effective in those years. But he kind of knew what he was doing. Yeah. And so he had a strategy and style. So he used all the skills that beyond physical skills, he used, you know, the sport and broke it down a lot. And so he was able to stay in it as an athlete longer than most, because there's ways to score from all kinds of different positions. And a lot of the positions that he would score upon were the top position, or were some defensive, offensive type of skills where you don't have to exert quite as much energy getting into those positions. But once you get there, then you have to exert that energy. But he was, you know, pretty much a master at that style, and that's why I think he lasted that long.
You look at 1995, those world championships held in Atlanta, almost as a prelude to the Olympic Games in Atlanta the next year. Dave finished fifth at the 95 World Championships, and to give you an understanding on where Dave was and who the Young Bucks were coming through, that tournament was won by some guy from the Russian Federation named Satiev. So he ended up having a pretty good career. The silver medalist was Alexander Leopold, who had plenty of world medals before, even before he was popped for a banned substance in 2000. But you see Dave competing in a weight class against one of the all-time greats in Satiev, who at the time was 14 years younger than Dave Schultz. So, you know, like you said, he's in it for the long haul. Now we go to 96, right into 96. We know how the story ends. So we'll just jump in terms of, when did you get the phone call, and when how did you first respond when you had heard that that John DuPont had killed Dave Schultz?
No, it's you don't ever predict things like this, because it just, the prediction is impossible to do. But if there was ever a call that, you know, most people would say it was a shocking call. For me, it was like the call that came, that was eventually going to come. But I didn't, you know, think it was going to be maybe that extreme. But there was something there over all the years that I was involved in there, because, you know, I actually trained on his, trained teams on his farm. Didn't live on his farm. I just couldn't stay on his farm, and a lot of people could. And Dave was one of those guys that could stay on his farm, you know, and the story goes, he took care of John in a lot of ways, maybe some ways that John didn't understand. And so for me, when I got that call, somebody called me in my home where I am right now, actually. And when the phone call came, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm speechless, but I wasn't totally shocked and I wasn't totally surprised. If you live a little bit in danger, you kind of get used to it, and I think he might have been used to being a little bit in a position on his farm that, oh, that's just John, or that's okay. And there's a lot of things that weren't okay. And so the word gets out. And because of that, you know, it's like you're putting yourself a little bit in more jeopardy. It's just like getting in your car and driving someplace. It's a little bit more risky in the car when you're going down the interstate, or it depends on how busy the traffic is and what the case, the scenario is, and whether you have ice on the freeway. And, you know, it's a little bit like, I think a little bit like living on the farm is a little bit like driving on ice, you know? So, it wasn't totally shocking to me.
As we fast forward now, over 20 years since his passing, I never had a chance to meet him. I've gotten to know Nancy over the years. I've gotten to strike up a relationship with his son, Xander, who's working on this, the Pro Wrestling League, the Prowl. And there's also the brand Rudis, which has had a line of Dave Schultz gear that is starting to float out. And it's introduced Dave Schultz to a generation of wrestlers who weren't even alive when he was competing. What does it say for our generation of wrestlers and the kids that are coming through, and then, you know, people your era, my era, the kids behind us, that they have an appreciation for Dave Schultz, having never actually witnessed him compete with their own eyes? They have documentaries, they have YouTube. That's their, where they know about Dave Schultz. Does it, you know, what's the feeling when you see people today wearing a shirt that says Dave Schultz on it?
I think Dave, I mean, I'm in the sport my whole life, but not as an athlete. He was pretty much an athlete the whole time he was in the sport. And, because of that, I would say that through all the effects that he gave out there, the effects are still trickling down to people, from coaches, from people that are associated with him. And I think Dave is the first guy that I've ever known, maybe the only guy, but I think he's helped people actually realize what they can do to help get themselves better for our sport. I would say that I would use the term Dave studied the sport. And Dave was studying the sport before we could study the sport. And so that's one of the reasons why he had to go to Tbilisi to learn. To see, to witness, to be around, feel it. Whereas now we don't have to actually, we need to go, but you can get a little bit of a feel through technology. And so before technology, Dave was our technology, and you pushed a button on Dave and he could show you the skill. But, and for me, it was more like I probably was, the mental frame. I kept wanting to learn holds, but I was more like the active guy that was the hard worker that was, executing, but doing things in a manner that were more physical and from a standpoint of just getting after it. Whereas Dave would break things down and study and actually open a book I had done that actually, but I never really did it to the extent. And I have a collection of books from Russia back when I wrestled. That when I got a chance to go over there, I would find all these Russian technique books. But Dave was really into that. I mean, that's the part of me he probably liked me the most. You know, from the standpoint that I appreciated the skills and the tactics. But what he liked. What he did like, what he liked around me, that he need, what he needed, but he didn't like it, was the fact that I'm working a little bit too hard physically, maybe. And he just wanted to really understand the science and be able to execute those holds and tactics that wasn't so through hard work. It was more like disciplined work. And that's Dave Schultz.
Coach Gable giving us an interesting insight here on the Wrestling Resource Podcast about the late Dave Schultz. Coach Gable, I'm sure we could probably talk a couple more hours on this topic. We may revisit it on a future episode, but appreciate the time and the conversation today here on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast.
Well, I'll tell you, what's really good about this is we're talking about things that happened in the 70s and early 80s, and it's right there still in front of us. So it's carried forth, and his impact, just like you said, is still carrying on, and I don't think it's going to probably let up. I'm on this earth, and I'm still working hard. I'm not letting up, but Dave Schultz isn't letting up either.
Subscribe to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast by going to WWRpodcast.com and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, or wherever you find your podcasts. World Wrestling Resource at worldwrestlingresource.com.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.